welcome to Season 2, Episode 9 of Our Voices, Our Community, presented by Colors VA Magazine. Each week, we focus on issues that are important to you and our community. We discuss social, political, and economic issues, but also arts and cultural, and much more. Our goal is to merge local with state and national issues that affect our lives in Roanoke, the New River Valley, and Southwest Virginia. Today, we are joined by Will Solari, Karen Jones, and our special guest, Peter Volleson. Hey guys, how are you doing?
Hey, we're good. How are you?
I'm fine. And Peter, I actually got your last name correct.
Yeah, it's a rarity, but thank you for that.
No problem. Well, Peter, thank you. And just for the audience, just to know a little bit about Peter, Peter is executive director of WIN Virginia. And in August of 2018, he has the experience as a union organizer, economic planner, and he was a former congressional candidate. In addition to his work, he's been active in labor and marriage equality campaigns across the United States and abroad. Peter lives in Roanoke with his husband, Malcolm, and their dog, Rula. Is that Rula?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Who you guys rescued while living in Mozambique. That's a story there that we'll probably want to hear a little bit later.
Yeah.
Peter is also an avid swimmer, and he actually qualified for the 2008 U.S. Olympic trials. He earned his bachelor's degree from Brown and a master's degree from Georgetown. He's very active in the community. He serves on the board of the Roanoke Valley Allegheny Regional Commission, the Virginia Recreational Facilities Authority, Roanoke Fair Housing Board, and is president of Roanoke Diversity Center. And I hear you just recently been elected on the board of Local Colors.
Yeah,
not Colors VA, but Local
Colors.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm really excited about that. It's such a great community organization that really celebrates the diversity of Roanoke, which I think we need to do more and more.
Yeah, I agree. I agree totally. Well, thank you for joining us today. Karen likes to use the term hodgepodge. It's a term I've been using for several weeks now.
Yeah.
I don't know, ever since that term been coming out, I've been using it in my daily language.
Hodgepodge is the best word because you can use it for like anything, you know. I think Justin, our admin, he was like, you know, you can eat some hodgepodge. Sounds like porridge.
It's
like
good catch-all.
It's good word.
Okay, I still think it's a term used for other ethnicities.
this black girl from Christiansburg loves the hodgepodge.
Oh, yeah, you also like to use yonder.
Isn't hodgepodge also like that stuff you use to like decoupage with? It's like, you're like, oh, glue this to that and make all these crafts out of it. Isn't that a thing, too? Or am I...
I think you're stretching the use of a word.
Is that a stretch word?
I don't know.
Okay, well, let's get focused, people. Hodgepodge. Hodgepodge is a term of the month. Well, let's start talking about today. Well, Tuesday will be National Voter Registration Day. Did you guys know that one in four eligible voters in the United States are not registered to vote? That I did not know, and that's according to vote411.org. Peter, you might know that. You might have knew that.
Yeah, that's not too surprising to me. You know, we see a lot of low turnout in elections, and this year, 2019, is one that's going to be particularly low. Mm-hmm. We call it an off-year election. So the more people we can get registered to vote and be active will be really important this year.
Well, we all, I'm going to assume around the table that we're all registered to vote.
Sure, absolutely.
Okay, okay. I really had to ask you that question.
I'm a protest voter.
Okay, but...
We had that talk a little while back about how important voting is and kind of getting into the spirit of voting and you know, saying hello, citizen, and good work and all that kind of stuff. And I think that's an important thing. And sadly, you know, 25% of people not voting is not, I hate to say it's not surprising, but it's unfortunate still.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think it was really helpful that today Facebook actually has on their, when you go and log in, it has National Voting Day and a way for you to share it so that you can show your friends to make sure that they're all signed up to vote.
Well, at least people we know, hopefully the people on Facebook, actually they will register to vote too. I mean, instead of seeing all the other good things that we have on our great social media platforms that we have across the country.
But you know, one of the things though, I think as Virginians, because you know, there's an election every year, and every year the elections are important. We're not just voting for a dog catcher, right? Like every year they're super important. So I would think as Virginians, this would be like top of our list, and the turnout rate would be much higher. But for National Voter Registration Day, we're going out in Montgomery County to apartment communities where we know that there's, based on the data, you know, there's a high percentage of people who aren't registered voters. But my thing is, we can't just register the voters. We got to make sure they're informed, they know what's happening and going on, what's going on. Have enough information about the issues to make good decisions based on their values, but then we get them to the polls. Because being registered and then not voting or having a way to get there kind of defeats the purpose of the process. So hopefully today will be a good day and we'll get lots of people. And then Election Day, we'll see the results of that.
Yeah, I think also we need to understand what's in it. You know, we have this feeling about what's in it for us, for the voter. I mean, we have to give them reasons why, you know, being African-American, I think, you know, especially African-Americans, they should already know why you should be voting. All the sacrifices that that community has already made, I think it's important. I think it's kind of already have the reasons why we should be doing this.
Sure.
But still, I mean, the issues around, you know, the, when we talk about climate change, and we'll talk a little bit about that, about economics, making sure that they're right to people find jobs, I think is important too. But we still have to remind them why it's important and what's in it for them, instead of thinking they're doing it like for someone else. It's important that you be involved as well.
Yeah, and I think voting in that regard is also a very important issue amongst politics, but in amongst how you view politicians and people working in that arena. Because if you're working to make voting more prohibitive, to make it harder to do, you know, awful versions of redistricting and doing every measure you can to prevent people from getting their right to vote back or preventing them from voting altogether, I think that says a lot about that politician.
Yeah,
and so,
yeah.
And again, it speaks to a lot of what you're talking about, the reasons why it is important for, you know, not just rich old white ladies who, you know, God bless them, all get out to vote, but to be the only ones who are consistently voting.
Right.
And I think it's this year is really important for that very reason that you were talking about with gerrymandering. You know, whoever wins the election this November will have control of the House and
yes.
Senate come 2021, which is when we will redraw those lines based on the census.
Mm-hmm.
And right now we have fair redistricting law that passed once. We need it to pass again for it to become constitutional here in Virginia. So that's another really important reason to get out and vote this November, so that we don't have the same gerrymandering that we saw overturned this year by the federal courts. Or we don't turn into North Carolina, where it's like a jigsaw puzzle.
Man, you're right.
Yeah. Or we're Roanoke City getting saddled with Bob Goodlett for 300,000 years.
Yeah, he's been, yeah. well, we don't have to worry about that
then,
no
yeah,
more,
well, but we have Bob Goodlett Jr. now, so.
Yeah.
Excuse me?
What's Ben Klein, is that his name?
Oh, okay.
So,
all right, I was like.
The heir apparent.
Exactly. Oh, okay, well.
The spiritual successor.
I will say this, and I think this is important to know. Virginia is the second worst state in terms of people being able to vote with our restrictive law. So we are just above Mississippi, right? So Mississippi's the worst, then Virginia, then everybody else. And so I think it's really important that we make it as easy as possible for people to vote. But also, don't let these barriers stop you, because the barriers are put in place to deter you and to keep you from that. And so we need to overcome those as well. So hopefully National Voter Registration Day, we'll have a good day. And then Election Day will be super awesome and amazing.
Well, I know. Peter, go ahead.
So one other thing is that voting has actually already started in Virginia.
Yeah.
So if you are not going to be present at your voting location on Tuesday, November 5th, you can go to elections.virginia.gov to find out where your registrar is, and you can go vote in person, your registrar office, wherever your locality is, and most of the time they have weekend voting as well. So that's all started already.
Okay, well, thank you. One thing you mentioned, you know, Mississippi, we always why do you always bash Mississippi?
Man, as someone who was born in Mississippi, I can give you every reason why
it seemed like Mississippi is the lowest on
lovely state.
Every survey or anything, in Mississippi is always last. Education, last. Economic, last.
So this is why Virginia should be concerned. Why is that the only state below us, right?
Okay,
like,
right. Well, I just
you know,
don't want, I
but
don't want,
to
I don't,
all the Mississippians listening, I love y'all, and you guys keep fighting the good
fight.
Well,
you still keep the language of y'all, so I know you like Mississippi.
Well, you know, it's exactly what we're saying, though. You know, if you value education,
yes,
then vote people into office who also value education.
Yeah,
and that's the story of Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
It's like put priority in the things that you want to matter, and they will matter.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, before we move to the next subject, I do want to remind people that the registration deadline is Tuesday, October 15th to register to vote for the upcoming election. So as many ways you can do it, but one way you can go to www.vote411.org to register. It's an easy way to do that. I know there's other campaigns by different organizations to get people registered to vote.
Rock the vote.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's old. Is that Bill Clinton?
That was a ways back.
Yeah, that's a ways back.
That's MTV.
Well, you're aging yourself.
I know. But it worked, right? I mean, yeah. I'm still talking about it. So
okay. Well, we're excited about this today's podcast. We also have a special. Peter, you're special, but we have a special guest that will be joining us just a little bit later. But we're also going to talk about climate change. You're aware that Roanoke is buzzing with activism relating to climate change. There was a climate strike that was last Friday, and then on Monday there was a march against the pipeline. Roanoke Times published several op-eds and commentary on this topic. So to you guys, I affectionately call you guys the bunch. What do you guys think about the recent activism regarding climate change?
I mean, if you starting with the pipeline that you mentioned, mm-hmm. I think it's a perfect example of something that is detrimental to our environment, mm-hmm. in terms of the eminent domain and just the swath of land that's had to consume going through places it doesn't need to be, that no one wants it. It's a product of fracking, which is terrible. And then on top of that, if there's an issue that unites like Roanoke libertarians and like the far left, you have to know that it's a really bad idea. It's not just a political, you know, volleyball. It's not whatever. Mm-hmm. Like if everyone is in agreement that this is a terrible thing, other than the people who have received donations from the company creating that pipeline, then it's a bad deal for everyone. And I think that's deals like that and projects like that are why you kind of see this fever pitch now. People, I think, are very fed up with this kind of just lax. It doesn't matter if it's good for this or bad for that. We're going to pay the right people off, and we're going to do this thing and make the most money we can, and trash everything in our wake, and then you guys can maybe fix it later with your taxes and whatever else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think the climate strike though Friday was really pretty awesome and amazing because Roanoke participated in Blacksburg. The drill field was full, led by Blacksburg High School students with that strike. And I think seeing how young people are caring for our earth and being good stewards, just like we did as we were young, because we started, you know, with recycling and all of these things because we recognize that we need to take care of our earth. But when you look at kind of the devastation of the pipeline and what it's doing to our communities, people having to really fight for their homes,
right,
is a horrible thing. You should never have to fight so hard to keep your home and your livelihood. Hearing stories from people that have lost everything, you know, because of it. But even it's the small things, you know, we're put here to be stewards of the earth. And I think we're not doing a good job of that. And just the little things that I notice without having to be scientific or any of that stuff, you know, it doesn't snow like it used to. Everybody should think that's a problem, mm-hmm. right? Like, we don't get giant storms snowstorms anymore. That's kind of an issue. We have a drought right now. So, you know, in Montgomery County, we can't burn anything. Not that I burn stuff, but, you know, those are issues that you have to think about. And the air that we breathe is so important. And if we're not taking care of it now, what are we going to do? I think it said by 2050, it's going to be like irreversible, or the earth is going to blow up. I don't know. Yeah. One of the two. But 2050 is not that far away. So what are the things that we can do? People have more bears and foxes hanging out in their yards because we're taking away their natural habitat. So all of these things, I think, that we need to think about.
Well, as you see people do things like gutting the EPA, I think it's easy for these kind of like faux conservatives and faux libertarians to kind of go, well, see, it's just, we don't need all that regulation and whatever else. But I think a lot of those people forget, you know, like in Cleveland in like the late 60s, like the river going through Cleveland caught on fire. It was a body of water that caught on fire, and then they couldn't put it out. Like, and that's the reason we have regulations, and that's the reason we try to keep things safe, so those things don't happen. It's not to stifle industry. It's not because, you know, people have bought into this like liberal fantasy that green energy is, you know, X, Y, or Z. It's because we tried all those awful things and they didn't work, and now we're paying for them instead of going back to them. It, you know, the best thing we can do is try new things, even if they don't work.
Is the EPA still in existence?
Yes, they are.
Okay, I didn't know. Who's the secretary of the EPA?
Nobody knows, because they're always an acting secretary when it's under Trump.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
But what is it? One of them like an Exxon like official
are.
Like
yeah.
In charge of the EPA.
Yeah,
that's a smart move.
I mean, they're fighting against California's auto emission regulations, which are stricter than most of the rest of the country. They're actually kind of doing the anti-EPA work, where they're reducing a lot of the regulations that we have in place that are making our society more helpful and are more healthy and our environment as well. And on your point, Will, about, you know, not wanting regulation, well, let's let the free market take over. Right now we're seeing the free market. The price of coal is dropping incredibly because we're moving over to renewables. And countries like China, India, they're investing in those future renewables. So if we really were to like let the free market take over, we would see these fossil fuels going quicker and quicker.
Yeah.
And just like on climate change, here in Roanoke, we have some of the most to lose. The environment is worth more today than it is tomorrow. So everything that happens around us, we're all here because we love the mountains. We love having these beautiful forests and everything around us. So we need to be more active here in Roanoke to make sure that we're doing our part to save the environment. You know, these investments in fossil fuels are investments in the past. We all know that solar panels are cheap and effective and they create jobs. Mm-hmm. And yet we continue to spend billions of dollars on oil subsidies. Tell me that ExxonMobil needs a subsidy right now. Mm-hmm. I think they're doing pretty darn well. There's just so much that we can be doing here. And I was so happy to see the climate strike and to see so many folks in Blacksburg that were marching. And the kids are the future. And I am so happy to see Greta, I can never pronounce her last name, but I think it's Thunberg, mm-hmm. At the UN yesterday and yes. basically scolding people. Yeah. And she should be.
Rightfully so, yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
Donald Trump tweeted at her and teased her, which of course that's always great when your president is teasing a child. But she's so right. This is her future. He said, why isn't she worried about the bright future that she could have or something snarky like that? Well, she doesn't have a future if she lives in Puerto Rico or the Bahamas, mm-hmm. where we're already seeing climate change destroy islands, mm-hmm. where they no longer can live in their home. They are now refugees that have to go somewhere else. So she's absolutely right.
I saw I saw a documentary on wind, and I think there was an experiment where they actually have kites now going in the ocean to trap wind energy. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was great. And I see that's the future.
Well, again, this is a theme that we speak about often on the show, is it's like a lot of people who have the ability to think progressively or just think creatively, just don't do it. The president is a perfect example. But, you know, even as locally as AEP, you know, AEP is starting to make that shift. AEP already has a very well and functioning hydroelectric dam, and now they're introducing wind and solar power, but they want to charge people a premium to use the better technologies.
Yeah.
And I don't understand that as part of that kind of, can we please just think smarter about this and more sustainably than can we just make a buck on this? Mm-hmm. Because ultimately, coal's going to run out. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, we should be charging the people who want their power done through coal or natural gas more, because those are the ones creating the problem. And I don't know. Again, I'm a bit flabbergasted by how we're trying to upcharge the people who want to make a difference.
Yeah. Wouldn't it also be interesting? It would change internationally the government relations between different governments if we find energy that we don't need oil anymore.
No, absolutely.
I'd be surprised how all of a sudden Saudi Arabia wouldn't be that important to us if we can find ways to have renewable energy and other parts. I'd rather deal with
journalists
Denmark.
Murdering Saudi friends.
Yeah, exactly. I'd rather go to Denmark and with Norway and the things they're doing in there. Go ahead, Peter.
Well, isn't that true energy independence?
Yes.
That's what is a big Republican talking point, is we need to drill off of Virginia because we need to have more oil so that we're independent of these countries. Well, why don't we just get off it in general? I mean, nuclear, I know that, you know, with Fukushima and some other things, nuclear is seen as this technology that could be devastating. But a lot of those old nuclear plants are built on, you know, designs from the 60s and 70s, and we haven't really built any new nuclear plants, and it's really interesting what's going on in that sector. We know that wind and solar, you know, it's intermittent. If there's no sun out or there's no wind, you reduce your power. But if you have a nuclear plant, that's giving you that baseline primary energy instead of fossil fuels. I think that's, we're not pumping out any CO2. All you have is steam that comes out of a nuclear plant. And there's now, they're looking at technologies that can use spent nuclear waste to produce that nuclear energy. So you're actually getting rid of nuclear waste as well. So I think that's another investment.
That's new. You know, I keep thinking when you say nuclear, the first thing that comes to my mind is Chernobyl and, mm-hmm. and things like it. I guess technology has changed a little bit.
Yeah, it has. And, you know, I saw the Chernobyl thing on HBO, and that will keep you up at night.
Yeah, it will.
But, you know, the other thing is just always follow the money. If you want to know why certain groups push so hard for coal and natural gas and oil, guess where a lot of their campaign contributions come from? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's no surprise that Mitch McConnell is funded in a large part by the coal industry. And even when coal workers are like begging, please, we're dying of black lung, can you do something? We voted for it. He's like, yeah, I would love to, but you guys just didn't give me enough money. Mm-hmm. And that's really the story of why, you know, we persist in these horrible industries.
Well, I hope we continue to create awareness regarding climate change, and hopefully, again, I guess that's important, the reason why we have a voter registration, and to make sure that we get people out and understanding what the issues are and realize and understand it does affect all of us. And to do that, we need to elect leaders who are committed to this and making sure that we have a future for our children and our grandchildren. So that's great. Well, let's talk about our very special guest here today.
Speaking of great leaders.
Great leaders, okay. Speaking of great leaders.
Perfect segue.
That's, perfect segue. That's what I get paid the big bucks for. our special guest today is Vice Mayor Joe Cobb. How you doing, Vice
Mayor? I'm good, Robert. How are you?
I am well, sir. Vice Mayor Joe Cobb was elected in 2018 Clinton, and since becoming a councilman, he has worked to learn more about the community. Just recently, he was promoting public transportation by doing public transportation yourself.
Yeah.
And also, he's initiated the gun violence task force and other items in our community. Joe, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Can I just say Joe?
Is there, please, do you know you can, title, Robert? You know
okay.
You can.
Yeah, okay. I just want to say that, I'm being respectful here. We're good. Well, typically when we have our very special guests, I kind of give a couple questions to you, and then the bunch will join in.
All right.
And we'll have conversations. So first question is, what is your overall view of Roanoke that since you've been elected vice mayor in regards to community and neighborhoods and economic development, yeah. Your perspective on that?
Because it's all woven together.
Yes.
Roanoke is an amazing city. One of the things I've loved most, not only in campaigning, but also being in a governing role, are all of the opportunities to talk with people and meet with people and see the different kind of energy levels that are present in our city. I've been impressed with the deep down interest of people to make the city better, even if they're frustrated by the daily challenges, some of which never seem to get anywhere. But there's still this kind of resilience to be a part of the solution. And within that, to make sure that leaders are listening, that there are opportunities for mutual sharing in conversation and through meetings. And I think that energy spills over into the economy as well. This past year, I had the honor of going to Kansas City to be part of the Kauffman Foundation's Mayor's Institute on Entrepreneurship. And they are collaborating with the National League of Cities to explore ways for localities of different sizes to create what are called entrepreneurial ecosystems. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways that's really apparent in our city is through the innovation corridors. Now, most of us know that the big innovation corridor in Roanoke kind of starts, if you look at the map, mm-hmm. it starts at the Higher Ed Center.
Yes.
And it goes through the Fralin Biomedical Research Institute and includes Virginia Tech and the School of Medicine and Carilion, all of those really critical partners. And we were recently at a meeting where 20 localities, the governing bodies of 20 localities, were invited to a meeting hosted by those entities to talk about the economic impact that we're seeing now in the region and the potential for that impact down the road. Now, something that folks may not know is that that's not the only innovation corridor in Roanoke. There are some smaller ones that are appearing in different parts of the city. The CoLab is one of those. The work that's happening over on 11th Street, 601 11th Street, Gainsboro area is one of those spots. But the idea is to create community amongst entrepreneurs and innovators, companies, businesses, corporations, foundations, any partners who are interested in innovation, to not only create a vibrant and growing economy, but in the process of doing that, also look at some of our greatest challenges as a city and how we can address those challenges. So it's taking that creative energy and turning it toward reducing some of our problems. Mm-hmm. So the greatest example I like to give is we can celebrate all the economic growth we want, but if we continue to sustain a 23% poverty rate,
right.
We're not getting anywhere.
Exactly.
And it's even higher for children. I think it's at 30% now. So one of our challenges is to take, as a community, these great studies that are being done that look at poverty, that look at health needs assessments, food insecurity, lack of transportation, and overlay those with the areas of economic growth. And I think the more that we can invest and economic growth in the areas where we have the highest poverty, we will then begin to see substantial change in the vibrancy of those communities.
Mm-hmm. You were initiated the Gun Violence Task Force, mm-hmm. and you're on the committee as well. Mm-hmm. And I think Mary Lee has sat in on some of mm-hmm. those as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah. How's the progress going with the committee? And are you guys in that process? Are you guys starting to see some solutions developing through that?
We are. As I like to remind folks, this was formally organized in June, and we're to bring a report back to council in November, which is not a very long time in the scheme of these kinds of efforts. We're also aware of the urgency. Not that gun violence hasn't been urgent for a very long time.
Right. We just recently had another death.
Yeah.
So we're up to 12, is that right?
12 homicides.
12 homicides, yeah.
And I was, the thing that struck me, and I'll get back to your question, but this mm-hmm. is an interesting thing, is that Sunday was the 19th anniversary of the shootings that took place on Salem Avenue on Backstreet Cafe, which is now called Front Row.
Right.
And I moved to Roanoke a year after that. And I remember experiencing the city of Roanoke as very just consolidated around this idea that we will not tolerate violence against anybody in our city. And the tangible feeling of that, you know, it is bipartisan. there were no divisions around this. And it struck me in reflecting on that how much violence we have seen nationally and internationally, mm-hmm. particularly related to gun violence. And the danger, of course, is just becoming numb to it, which I think many of us have experienced or seen or felt. And so part of our work as a task force is to constantly update ourselves on the data that we're finding locally, to come up with solutions that are tangible, practical, meaningful, and transformative. And realizing there are some things we can start quickly, and there are some other things that are going to take a longer time. And just a couple things that we're working on. One is a rapid response team that is both responsive but can also be preventative. And that is our ability to quickly respond with wraparound support for families that experience the loss of a loved one through homicide or a loved one who's injured. And part of that wraparound service is not only making sure they have access to the services they need outside of the hospital or outside of law enforcement. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not duplicating what they do, but there does seem to be a disconnect between, you know, once a family, a member leaves or the deceased family leaves the hospital, there's just kind of a void that they go into. And so our hope is that by creating a collaborative response team, we can also then, in that process of working with the families, do some preventative work. We've seen a couple of cases recently where there have been clear cases of retaliation.
Right.
And if we can work to help reduce those incidents, I think that's really critical. We have a team working on gang violence reduction. One of the cities we're studying is Compton, California, whose mayor I just heard speak recently, and they had an 80% violence rate that was related to gang violence. Mm-hmm. And through a collaborative effort, bringing leaders of gangs to the table, they talked about a different kind of way of being in the community, and they have reduced violence by, 60-70%. The rate of violence.
Yeah, you mentioned Compton. I had opportunity to spend some time in my formative years, I guess, in Compton. And even then, the gangs were a lot of in control of the neighborhoods. And mm-hmm. so just recently there was a show, and I won't mention the show, but where they opened a business, they had to get permission from the gangs, literally from the mm-hmm. gangs, not government, mm-hmm. from the gangs mm-hmm. to make sure it was okay for them to run their mm-hmm. business. And I mean, thank God we don't have that kind of issue here in Roanoke. But yeah, you're right. I'm glad that they're doing some things.
But it is tied together. I mean, yeah. Another thing we're looking at is the safety in neighborhoods and all of the things that are part of that. And so we're looking at how our schools, our businesses, our faith-based partnerships, our neighborhood organizations can really partner together to address things that contribute to violence, whether it's just increased lighting in neighborhoods or looking at abandoned properties or blighted properties and making sure that we reduce the number of those. That we create more meaningful activities for children and youth after school in the summer to redirect some of their energy in positive ways. So some of these, as I said, are really big picture things, but our goal is to bring some very specific recommendations to council on November 4th. And actually prior to that, we're hosting a public hearing that will be in response to these recommendations on October 17th.
Okay.
And that'll be at 7:00 in city council chambers.
Good. So when you were campaigning for council, you mentioned the need to improve our transportation system. Any updates or any? I know you went on a campaign. Is that with the United Way that you did the campaign about transportation, or was that? Or was that another initiative?
Oh, this was recently?
Yes.
Ride Solutions.
Ride Solutions,
yeah,
okay.
This was Tri-Transit Week.
Okay.
Yeah, and this all came about, well, I did run on transit as a primary centerpiece.
Because, how did that go?
Well, you know, one thing I've learned mm-hmm. is that campaigns are very aspirational. it's a time to explore ideas to the fullest.
Excuse me.
And then when you get elected, you bring those ideas into a system that has existed long before you did, and you figure out how to address these changes and do so in a way that can really bring about authentic and meaningful change. One of the things that I have heard, and it wasn't just during the campaign, I continue to hear it, is extended hours and Sunday service. Now, we've at least gotten that on the strategic plan for Valley Metro.
Okay.
But since getting elected, I've learned a lot more about some of the obstacles that lie between us and getting that. One of the challenges is ridership. Not only changing the perception of transit, but also encouraging more people to ride. Now, one of the things I'm encouraged by is that as people are retiring here, they are coming from larger markets where they don't, where they rely more on public transit and are actually interested in using it.
Okay.
And I learned recently that 26% of Virginia millennials do not have a driver's license. Now, how many of those are living in Roanoke or in the Valley? I don't know. But what that says to me is that they are relying more on public transit.
Yeah.
And so from a strategic standpoint, I think our city and our Valley needs to be forward thinking. And by Valley, I mean, it can't just be Roanoke City. It's got to be Roanoke County. It's got to be Botetourt, all of our surrounding counties, because as we tout being Virginia's Blue Ridge mm-hmm. and wanting people to have access to all of these services, that's got to mean everybody has yeah. access to them, not just the people who can afford it. So there's a lot of conversation within Valley Metro about how to expand services, how to more fully connect people with the resources that are available. They've been in conversation with different companies that are in adjoining counties to figure out transit opportunities. So we're seeing a lot more with van share programs, ride share programs. But for me, my whole experience with transit has it really shifted a couple months ago when I got tired of driving a clunker around that was not reducing carbon emissions. And I donated the car to public radio.
Okay.
And they got more than I thought they would get for it. But then I just started asking a different question. When I looked at my schedule each day, and instead of just assuming I would get in the car and go, I've been asking, where can I ride the bus? Where can I bicycle? Where can I walk? And then the last question is, depending on the schedule, where do I need to drive? Now, even in saying that, I acknowledge some privilege that I have, that I have access to a car, that I have access to these multiple forms of transit, and not everyone has access to those.
Right. I mean,
some people, their only access to transit is
the bus.
Is the bus.
Right.
And they navigate it beautifully. So I've been riding the bus a lot and getting to visit with people and seeing the city from a different perspective and deepening my appreciation for the drivers of our buses and all of the things they have to look out for. So I've been very, very pleased. And I think Valley Metro is making some good progress toward a lot of goals. I think my challenge to them is just keep publicizing the things that you're doing so that people can see them. And my hope is that through our small steps in collaboration with Roanoke County through economic development and planning department, that extending Valley Transit's reach into the county will also be expanded. I think they will see the benefits of that too.
Well, we have one last question for you, Joe, and then we'll let the bunch ask some questions. Today is National Voter Registration Day, and I know here locally there are some discussions regarding moving the city council elections from May into November. What are your thoughts about that possible move?
Well, I'm very interested in it for a number of reasons. Probably the prominent reason is just having better voter turnout and discerning, you know, when will we, by moving them to November, will we truly see greater voter turnout? I know we historically do, but will they finish the ballot? I mean, will they flip over from the first page and go to the local races? That's one interesting component. We brought this up at our retreat, our annual retreat in late July, and we're actually going to be discussing it again in October. And we've asked our city attorney to share with us information in terms of what it would require to change the city charter, what if any state codes would have to be amended or changed through the General Assembly. And then locally, just discerning what kind of energy is there among the citizens to change from May to November. And there are mixed reviews in different localities around the Commonwealth. But I think there's a lot of energy for it. I know personally, I worry a little bit about local Roanoke-specific issues getting lost in the with all of the races going on. I wonder how much more challenging that might be for local candidates to raise money for, you know, when they're competing, essentially, even though they may share a party affiliation, they're still competing with all these other signs and candidates. On the flip side, I think that there is some energy in making the connections between it's critical to vote nationally in the state and in the city because they're all connected in a way.
Right.
And I talked to people in the last election cycle who wouldn't vote locally. They'd only vote nationally or state.
Right.
And I really couldn't wrap my mind around that. But I think for many of them, they just don't see the connection, even though I think local elections have a lot more impact.
It's far more important.
On our lives.
Right. Yeah.
And our livelihood than the state and national elections do.
Wow. Well, good. Well, thank you. Thank you, Joe.
Thanks.
For this interview. And I guess the bunch, you guys have any questions? I know... Karen is eager to ask some questions.
Y'all know I love to talk. but I think one of the things, so You know, I go from calling you Vice Mayor Cobb to Pastor Cobb to Pastor Joe. So whichever one you like the best.
It all works.
Does it all work? Okay, good.
From moment to moment or day to day.
Okay, good. but one of the things in talking about transportation, when I used to work downtown Roanoke, mm-hmm. I was able to take the Smartway bus, mm-hmm. Which if you have not ridden the Smartway bus, I advise you to do it. It's relaxing. Mm-hmm. It gets you to where you need to be. It's perfect. But when I've worked in other parts of the city, like where I do now, that's not really an option because the times don't mm-hmm. fit, mm-hmm. you know, with the city bus. And so mm-hmm. it doesn't make sense for me to try to do that. So what conversations, I know you all are working with Roanoke County, but even as Blacksburg, Montgomery mm-hmm. County, and Roanoke are more and more connected, how do you see that potentially working? Or have you all thought about that?
Well, I'm sure there are conversations about it. I haven't been involved in those so much directly, but I think and this kind of goes back to the whole tourism thing with Roanoke Valley and this whole area being an increasingly important destination, and how people want to access transportation around and not have to worry about finding parking everywhere they go or navigating 81. Which is a nightmare. So I think there are conversations taking place, particularly with, you know, some of the players like Carilion, Virginia Tech, the Valley Innovations, even the Allegheny Roanoke Valley Regional Commission, looking at the impact of transportation currently mm-hmm. and how it can be expanded and how it can be collaborative. Mm-hmm. A lot of the work of the transportation committee that's part of that commission is really exploring those options. And some of those will be funded through Smart Scale dollars, mm-hmm. but some of them are really more geared toward what we can do regionally. And one of our challenges is helping the state realize that Southwest Virginia is a player. Mm-hmm. That
yes.
we're a viable player.
We are viable, and people need to know that we're here
exactly.
and
exactly.
and are ready to do the work, you know, all of mm-hmm. those things, because we so often get left out of the conversation. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I'm going to piggyback a little bit off what you were saying about Ride Solutions, too. I think one of the great untapped assets we have in the city is all the services they provide. And one of the big ones, if you're looking at ways to do anything other than just drive your car somewhere, is just get the Ride Solutions app. They have, mm-hmm. And I know this personally, but they have carpooling, they have bike
they
routes, they have 1,001 ways you can get somewhere that isn't just taking your car with only you in it.
When you go into the app and you put in where you are and where you need to go, and you hit the little transit button, it brings up all of the ways that you can get there. Mm-hmm. All of the ways. Mm-hmm. And then you can review all of those ways, or you can just select a specific way or a combination, and it shows you those. I will say, too, that Valley Metro just introduced a new app, VM Go, which is in the early stages, but it will tell you, it's real time. So it will tell you the Smartway bus, the Star City trolley, and Smartway Express, and it will actually show you where they are en route and how much time you have. And in 20, I think because this is going to be funded through Smart Scale funding, it will be fully accessible throughout all of their routes. So if you're at a bus stop, you will know how soon the bus will get there, instead of having to call the number or wonder if you've missed it. So I'm really encouraged by that. And they're working hard to update their system and to make it more user-friendly, which I think is one of the things we hear about a lot, how to make that happen.
Speaking about alternative transportation, I'd heard that there might be some scooter
yes.
companies coming to Roanoke. Can mm-hmm. you... tell us what's
going on.
Well,
the one I'm
that?
Aware of that will probably 49. Be here first is Bolt scooters. They have been meeting regularly with our city planning department. And the great thing about our planning department is that they've been very proactive in getting ready, getting the city ready for scooters. There have been a lot of municipalities where the scooters just descended and the government wasn't prepared, the citizens weren't prepared, and it was chaos. And in some cases, the city said, we need you out of here until we can get our act together. But Roanoke has gotten its act together before they arrive. And one of the benefits of these companies, and I'm impressed with Bolt, because they are really, their plan is to do a series of public events that are designed for training. And they'll be providing helmets. They'll be providing training for local officials as well as citizens on different occasions. And it's not only how to operate a scooter, but how to drop off a scooter, and how to be aware of the other modes of transit around you. Just like we, if we're driving a car, we have to be aware of that. The same goes for people who are riding scooters. And so I appreciate their investment in educating the public along with city government to make sure that we make this entry as safe as possible.
You know, going back just a little bit too, with some of the issues we were talking about with gun violence, or addressing, you know, the kind of local groups that help with poverty levels and whatever else, the things that we can actively do to improve our city. Austin recently created a bunch of grants and local laws to help combat the really restrictive laws that the state of Texas made over women's health care. You know, when it comes to like some of the issues that are facing Roanoke, whether it's gun violence or whatever else, do we have options locally if the state isn't willing to, again, whether it's acknowledge the Southwest as a kind of an economic power or acknowledge a kind of gun problem that we might have? I mean, are there things that we can do as citizens or as, you know, Roanoke City Council to kind of to not just create our own laws for things, but help counter that? You know, whether it's lack of support or funding or whatever else.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. And I think we're seeing more and more of that through public-private partnerships, where we have organizations locally that are really dedicated to creating solutions for a lot of these challenges, and they want to partner with city government. So we look at who all we can bring to the table, and it may be initiated by us or it may be initiated by a local organization. And then what resources do we have available locally, and what can we implement locally? A lot of what we can do doesn't have to go through General Assembly. But I think we can also press the envelope with General Assembly to say, we're working on these things and we need your support. Because this not only benefits Roanoke City, this benefits our region. And so to the extent that we can push them, I think that goes back to what Karen and I were referring to earlier, which is Southwest Virginia is an important player in the livelihood of this Commonwealth. And we have to keep standing up like the youth did on the climate strike and saying, you can't ignore us, we're here.
Well, Vice Mayor, I do have one last question, and I'm not trying to zing you, but I do have a question. It has to do with our beloved police chief that is recently going to be retiring. I know you have some involvement, but I know the city manager really makes that decision. I think because of we've been talking about it, about this in several podcasts. And one of the things we thought of, and I don't know if it's my idea or our idea, or maybe I just kept talking enough that it was my idea. But I was preaching and talking to existence, I guess. But having, and I've seen it in other municipalities, having some kind of citizen advisory committee, really, to, as you guys select a new police chief, to have the community be involved. And I know ultimately the city manager along with council will make the decision, but to involve the community in mm-hmm. some capacity. I don't know what your thoughts are. I don't know if that's already been discussed, but that's something that we've been talking about, mm-hmm. making sure that the police chief is involved in that. I mean, that the community is involved in that selection process. And I think it would yeah. be a good step in creating that a relationship with the community.
I think Bob Cowell, our city manager, is hyper aware of that.
Okay.
Yeah. And I've been impressed somewhere on the website, and I don't know if it's on his page or exactly where it's located. I can find out for you. He's kind of outlined the process and made that very public, and he's very interested in engaging as many people in the community as possible. I was just attending Saturday the Youth Summit with my 11-year-old daughter,
okay.
and one of the workshops was dedicated toward a three-question questionnaire for the youth who were present there. Regarding the new police chief, mm-hmm. what do you want to see in a new police chief? What do you think the police chief should know about the youth of Roanoke? What qualities would you like to see? It was three questions like that. Mm-hmm. But these are all very intentional ways of getting broad-based input into the process. And so it's not just, you know, in the interview stage where you have a citizens panel, but it's really prior to that. So mm-hmm. even going into that phase, he has as much input as is possible from the community. Good. And I will also share that with him.
Good.
That we can make sure that there are multiple opportunities for community conversations about those kinds of questions. It's really critical, especially as we're doing this work on reducing gun violence and just violence
absolutely.
In general.
Absolutely.
One of the things that's key is how that the person in that role can be effective in building relationships and being innovative, while also honoring the critical work that they have to do in law enforcement, and seeing enforcement as a partner with multiple partners in the city in keeping our city safe and healthy.
Thank you. Go ahead, Peter.
If I may add to that,
sure.
I know that Bob is already talking to community leaders. I've actually spoken with him about LGBTQ issues and what we would like to see in a new police chief. So mm-hmm. I know that he's already going out there and getting that feedback, which I think is really impactful. And that they will be, as Vice Mayor Cobb said, having a citizens board to help with the hiring, where we'll have people from diverse backgrounds in the city on that to help out.
Well, I'm glad we're all in agreement on that.
Yeah.
That's good.
We have all finally caught on to Robert's vision.
Well, I don't know if you caught on to my vision. Lord help you all if that's the case. But no, Vice Mayor Joe Cobb, thank you so much
thank
for joining
you.
Us
it's
today.
Great.
It's great.
Following your podcast for a while, and it's fun to be here.
Well, yeah, it's fun. We have some very spirited conversations here, but I think it's important. And it's all about engaging and making sure that we can get perspectives there. And so thank you again.
You're
for
very
joining
welcome.
Us. What we usually do near the end of the podcast, we usually go around the circle and really talk about what items or events you look forward to seeing this upcoming week. And I always like to start with the ladies. And Karen, you are a lady. And
I'm the only one here today.
You're the only one here today.
That's
so,
kind of
you know,
exciting.
Yeah, Catherine's not here, so.
Yeah, or the other Karen.
Yeah, or the other Karen, that's
yeah.
right. So go ahead, Karen, what are you looking forward to this week?
So I'm going to issue an invitation to everyone. You all know I love Montgomery County in the New River Valley. But next Wednesday, October the 2nd, and I think this is going to be fantastic. The League of Women Voters in Montgomery County and the Montgomery County, Rafford City, Floyd County, NAACP, we are going to have a panel discussion titled, What is the Cost of Voting in Virginia? It'll be October 2nd at 7 p.m. at the Blacksburg Municipal Building. And we're going to have fantastic people on that panel, including Dr. Warney Reed.
Oh, okay.
And Beth Openshane will be moderating that. So I encourage everyone to come. I think it's going to be amazing. And again, that's October 2nd, 7 p.m. at Blacksburg Municipal Building.
I love Dr. Warner Reed. I mean, I just sitting for a few minutes with him, I learned so much about especially the African American experience. Mm-hmm. He's a great man. He's one person I can sit down with him really and truly just listen to him.
Just listen, yeah.
Just listen to him.
Yeah.
And I can shut up and listen, which is very hard to do.
It is very hard for him to do. Yeah.
Peter, what's going on with you? What do you think you see coming this week?
I'm not going to be here for it, but I'm really excited about the Star City Urban Farm Bike Tour. So it's a tour that goes to all the micro farms in the city.
Oh, really?
Which will be pretty interesting. So you're getting both the outdoor active, you know, learning how to use your bike lanes, but you're also seeing the different places where people are farming locally. Okay. Here inside the city limits. And, you know, we have food deserts around this city.
Yes.
So it might be good to know where one of those is.
Yeah, that'd be great. That's great. Will, what's going on in your neck of the woods? What are you looking forward to?
Well, you know, something very near and dear to my heart is the Bike Shorts Film Festival on Friday.
Did you say Bike Shorts?
Bike Shorts. Okay, film festival.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
All not right. just a not just a screening about bike shorts.
Oh, okay. I mean, okay. That's what I was. I mean, you know,
that could be a thing.
I was waiting for you to fill it out.
It's
I,
a very I, you know, specific yeah. genre. Okay. But yeah, they're doing the 9th annual one over at the Grandin again at 7 on Friday. And so it's a great opportunity to see a bunch of local people who make films about featuring bicycles.
Okay.
And again, it's for Ride Solutions, who can't say enough good things about.
Yeah, they're a great organization.
And so, and it's just a fun time, and it's free.
Yeah.
So go, you know, see, it's some of my favorite things. You know, it's local organizations, it's local theaters, and it's local people making a film, essentially. So
okay.
Go check it out.
Joe, what are you looking forward to this week?
Well, a couple things. First, I'm going to go see my dad.
Okay.
Who's turning 88.
Oh.
And
you yeah. also celebrate an anniversary, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
18 years. 18 years. Thereabouts.
Old age.
Oh, wow.
But a couple things coming up that I'm really excited about. Next Wednesday, October 2nd, and Thursday, October 3rd, Roanoke College and the queer and trans people of color are bringing in Dr. E. Patrick Johnson for two events. One is a lecture at Roanoke College that's called Are We Not Family? Sexuality, Citizenship, and Politics in the New Black South. Mm. And he's going to be providing some historical context for why homosexuality is taboo in black communities in the South and sometimes considered as outside the black family. And he's done a lot of work on oral histories of people of color who are LGBTQ. And so then on Thursday night, he's actually going to do a performance because he's a professor of performance art. And that is going to be held at The Spot on Kirk Avenue at 7 o'clock p.m. And it's called Put a Little Honey in My Sweet Tea. And that's also based on these oral histories. So I think he's going to be introducing us to different people who have shared their stories. The other thing I'm excited about is following that, and on the following weekend, October 6th and 7th, we're hosting the Virginia Municipal League Mayor's Institute and then the Virginia Municipal League Conference.
Okay.
And it's a 3-day conference. We have visitors from all localities and governance throughout the Commonwealth of Virginia that will be here in Roanoke, and we're honored to host them this year. So if you see a lot of people who look like government officials wandering the streets of Roanoke, that's why they're here, and we're excited to share our city with them.
Okay. Well, one thing that I'm always try to do something national news. I'm not going to talk about the Democratic primaries. I think I've talked that to death. But also, I'm interested to see how the fallout of the incident regarding Ukraine mm-hmm. and some of the the communication our beloved president have said and done, and see what Congress will do regarding if they're actually going to do the impeachment. I think they're not going to do it, but I think we're getting so close to election year. I don't think they're going to be that. I don't think they're going to do it. I think they're just going to try to ride it out, and hopefully going into 2020, that they'll make a decision to vote. And so that means we need to get everyone out there encourage them to register to vote and actually make sure they vote this November and make sure the following year as well. So I've been following that story on a national front, so I'm just kind of curious how that is going to go along. But this has been a great podcast. Joe, thank you.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you all.
Peter, thank you for joining us. Thank you for joining. You're a temporary member of the bunch. So
I really enjoyed my time here today.
Yeah, good.
You know, y'all aren't that bad.
Wait till Catherine gets here. But thank you so much for joining us today. And thank you for listening to Our Voices, Our Community, presented by Colors VA Magazine. You can also listen to us each Sunday at 3 p.m. on WROE 95.7, Radio Free Roanoke. If you like what you've heard today, leave us a review. Also, be sure to like Our Voices, Our Community on Facebook. Thank you and have a blessed day.